He's the youngest president of an historically black college in the nation, and he calls Jacksonville home. Good Monday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a good weekend out there. Start your morning off right with us every day at 9, live from WJCT. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, the new president of Edward Waters College, A. Zachary Faison Jr., joins us to talk about the future of the school and its neighborhood. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, October marks Gullah Geechee Awareness Month in Florida. We'll take a look at the new film exploring that culture. Plus, Culpepper as the Jaguars roll over the Jets at home this weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, he is the new president and CEO of Edward Waters College. Dr. A. Zachary Faison Jr. is just 37 years old, so he is now the nation's youngest president of an HBCU. That's a historically black college or university. Faison is an attorney who comes to Jacksonville from former general counsel and vice president of external affairs at Tuskegee University. And he succeeds Nat Glover, who retired after making a number of changes and improvements to EWC. We're pleased to welcome Zachary Faison Jr. to the studio with a look ahead at his tenure leading Edward Waters College. Dr. Faison, good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning. Delighted to be here.
And what are your questions for Dr. Faison? He is the new leader of Edward Waters College and the youngest HBCU president in the country. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And first off, let me just say, since you're still pretty new to town, welcome and congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you so very much. I'm just delighted again to be here in the First Coast City. Uh-huh. And so I've been getting acclimated. I'm so happy to be a part of this great Jacksonville community.
Now, you grew up in Atlanta, but you come to Jacksonville from Tuskegee, correct?
Yes, yes. Grew up a native of Atlanta, Georgia, born and bred there. And most recently, was general counsel and vice president for external affairs at Tuskegee University. But I'm so happy and excited now to be the president here at Edward Waters College, one of the shining jewels in higher education, not only in the state of Florida, but throughout the nation.
It is a well-known HBCU, historically black college or university. There are several dozen, I believe, around the
country.
Actually,
108.
Okay,
108.
I stand corrected. More than 100. You are now the youngest president of an HBCU in the country. You're not even 40 yet.
Yes.
Pretty big deal. And so amazing academic record that you bring to bear on this job. Why do you think you were chosen? What's your vision for Edward Waters College?
Well, I think I was chosen because of some of the energy and vibrancy. I'm a millennial leader. And so, you know, what I think I bring to the table is a connectedness to students, particularly millennial and post-millennial students, bring a strong background in development and fundraising, a background, of course, as a lawyer, and some of the critical thinking and really planning that lawyers bring to bear when they're leading institutions. And so I think that was part and parcel to the reason that the board chose me to lead at this particular time. I've also had a lot of experience in enrollment management and student affairs relative to putting the kinds of infrastructures and planning in place to grow institutions. And so mm-hmm. that's what we're excited to be about the business of doing at EWC going forward.
549-2937 to connect with the new president of Edward Waters College, Dr. A. Zachary Faison Jr. He succeeds Nat Glover, the former sheriff and former college president, who retired last year. And what a changing of the guard. Not only at Edward Waters College, but we also have seen other university presidents around town retire. John Delaney retired from UNF. Of course, Nat Glover retired from EWC. Cynthia Bioto retired from leading FSCJ. The last man standing is Tim Kost over at JU. He's becoming the elder statesman now of this academic world in Jacksonville, although he's by no means an old guy. It's just that so much young energy is coming in. And you're, I think, an example of that, this generational changing of the guard.
Right, right, right. It's an exciting time. I think, transition is a good thing. I think the old saying says, if you're not moving forward, then you're not moving at all. And so, it is a transition time. I can share that my transition with Dr. Glover has been a seamless one. Of course, his name goes without saying in this community. And he's, of course, one of our most distinguished alums. And so we're just excited now to kind of move forward and build on the 152-year foundation that already exists at EWC. And so when you talk about vision, one of the things that kind of my philosophy in terms of leadership is not to come in and dictate a vision. Sometimes folks can come in, sit in their ivory towers and decide amongst themselves what it is that they're going to do. And so one of the things that we've been doing over the past few weeks that I've been at Edward Waters is really getting around and into the community, meeting with our faculty, our staff, our students, our alumni, the greater EWC community there, and really coalescing around where we see EWC, really making an assessment of our strengths right now, what are our weaknesses, what are our areas of opportunity, and then being able to kind of coalesce to build a shared vision. Of course, we have some strategic objectives that will always be there. Of course, we want to enhance the student experience such that we are able to produce more demonstrably successful outcomes around graduation and retention rates for our students. And we want to, of course, develop a culture of philanthropic support at the institution, particularly being a private small institution. We depend largely upon the benevolence of those partners that are going to be engaged with us and support the work that we do in educating our future leaders. And so we're going forward now in meeting with various folks in our constituencies and our stakeholders to really, really chart that pathway forward for us.
Edward Waters College made news just, a couple of weeks ago after a flap over early voting sites on college campuses and demands that they be expanded to Jacksonville campuses. So now, as we head into the November midterm election, EWC and UNF will host early voting sites for the students. What are your thoughts about that whole situation?
Well, we're excited about the fact that EWC has been added as an early voting site. Of course, we have long been a champion in the community for civic engagement. We promote that particularly amongst our students and for our community. And so any way that EWC can be positioned to help to support, again, that political and civic engagement, first amongst our students and then, of course, amongst the greater Jacksonville community, we are excited to be a partner towards that end.
Let's go to some calls now for Dr. Faison. I'm the youngest president in the country of an HBCU, that's an historically black college or university. He takes the helm from the retiring Nat Glover as the new president and CEO of Edward Waters College, the 152-year-old institution in Jacksonville. What are your comments, questions? Give us a call, 549-2937. Bob is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning. First off, congratulations on the presidency, sir. I have a question for you. I work with a nonprofit that teaches disadvantaged youth at risk technical vocational training, and I'm wondering why some colleges like EWC don't have a path so that these young people who become employed, gainfully employed, can't go forward and get a college degree with something less than 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Actually, EWC has a very progressive program. It's called our CLIMB program, and it actually is for adult students and also students that may have maybe have the associate's degree or have that kind of workforce training. And then they can transition actually into our CLIMB program where you get a bachelor's degree in business and or organizational management. And so Edward Waters actually does have a degree to kind of make that transition. There's a smooth pipeline for those young folks or adult learners that do have an associate's degree or have gone through some kind of vocational education training, and then they can transition that into a 4-year degree. So I would be excited to share more with you about that offline. And we certainly are positioned to be able to support, that kind of transition for those students that are interested in achieving a 4-year degree.
549-2937. Kathy is in Riverside. Hi, Kathy. Good morning.
Hi. Congratulations and welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. I was listening this morning about the budget for the city of Jacksonville. And this is really weird because I thought to myself, I worked sporadically at Edward Waters. Actually, I was there at 9/11. But
What do you remember about that day?
Goodness.
I remember sent all the kids to the chapel.
Yes.
But I was thinking to myself, I would like to see more money put around the area of Edward Waters, and I was curious as to your thoughts on the area around Edward Waters and what plans you have and what plans you would like to talk to the city about making changes and making upgrades and just put more money put into that part of town.
Sure. Sure. Thank you so much for that. She took the words right out of my mouth. Thanks, Kathy.
Great. Great question. That is certainly something that's high on my priority list. I will share with you, I actually served at Edward Waters about 10 years ago. Was here for a very, very short amount of time. But I've sat down with some local leaders already and shared that 10 years ago, I came to that campus. And 10 years later now, I'm there, having been there about 8 weeks. And as I look around that Kings Road corridor, not much has changed.
Yeah.
And so we know that there needs to be a very significant and intentional investment in Edward Waters College and the surrounding community there. So goes Edward Waters in that community. So goes the community. I will say that we are excited and very pleased with the support that our mayor and city council has recently gifted the institution about $9 million to support a new stadium that will also serve as a health and wellness kind of track facility for the citizens in the community there. In addition to that, the city has gifted the institution about $4.5 million and made an investment in one of our largest residence facilities. So that's a great start. We're excited about that. But there is certainly much, much more work left to be done. I can share that from a recruitment standpoint and from a retention standpoint, we need a more of an investment from the business community and from the city to be able to provide the kinds of services that, again, mm-hmm. as I talked about earlier, millennial and post-millennial students are looking for. We need a drugstore in that community. We need grocery shopping in that community. We live in a food desert there. And many of the citizens that are properly in that North Jacksonville Kings Road corridor are without very, very essential services. And so it's a real challenge for us. I will share with you, when we opened school back in August, I had students and parents that came to the institution sight unseen. And I cringe to say this, but it's just the truth. They came, looked around the community, got back in the car and left because they said, I just don't feel comfortable leaving my son or daughter here. And that's something that it's a sobering reality.
You're saying they pulled them out of school altogether after they had planned to come?
They came to campus to enroll their students and then looked around the community. There's, again, no grocery, no real eateries. It just is not conducive for the kinds of experiences that young folks and parents want for their sons or daughters. And so we do all that we can at the college to be able to provide a safe and a conducive environment that's going to support their learning. But we need more partnership from our business community and from other stakeholders around the city of Jacksonville to partner with us, because we're educating our future. And so if there wasn't an Edward Waters College, you'd have to create one, because that institution and that community are critical to the forward progression of the entire community.
You know, it's interesting that we're having this conversation with you today about the Kings Road corridor, about Northwest Jacksonville on October 1st, 2018, which marks the 50th anniversary of Jacksonville consolidating its city and county governments. As a matter of fact, there's going to be a big bash tonight downtown at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center honoring the big event. Okay. And so, as we mark this 50 years of consolidation, it's being touted as largely a success, because back in the 60s, the idea was to streamline services, reduce corruption and graft in the city, and Jacksonville was rebranded the Bold New City of the South when they did this. The negative side to consolidation was the institutional racism that was embedded in it. Basically, neighborhoods north and west of the St. John's River got the short end of the stick. They were the leaders in the African American community that encouraged Black voters to vote yes on consolidation said, vote yes for this and we will get improved city services. We will get better infrastructure in our neighborhoods. We will finally see some investment in the core old core city. Well, 50 years later,
wow,
those promises never were realized. After 50 years, we still see neighborhoods suffering from a lack of investment. Food deserts, as you said. Many neighborhoods don't even have adequate sidewalks or sewer. Basic things that a big city should have for all citizens. And so this is a big challenge for you as president of Edward Waters College, because as yet, there is still not the political will in Jacksonville to right these wrongs and to really get serious about fixing this problem. And so, as you mentioned, you're going to need the private sector to step up because, politically speaking, the civic side of the ledger has not really delivered on this
right.
over many years and many administrations.
Right. Well, and as you pointed out, you know the history better than I do, but it sounds as if it's certainly long overdue, that investment. And I think where we sit, you know, as an institution of higher education is to say that we are a worthy investment. The investment in Edward Waters College will have a profound and very demonstrable impact on the community there. When you talk about being able to invest in educating young people, when you talk about being able to invest in the folks that are in that community, it's long overdue. And we believe that an investment in EWC will, in fact, result in an uplift of that entire community. And so, you know, one of the things, again, that I'll be looking to do is to really get out and beat the streets, get to know the folks in our Northwest Jacksonville community. They're excited about the new leadership there. And we are excited to be able to kind of be a champion for the 32209 area code in which we sit. We know that there are many challenges there, but we are excited and we're confident that we're going to get the support that we need from the business sector, as well as the continued support from the city and state.
Lee tweets the show, how will Dr. Faison leverage his youth in increasing enrollment at Edward Waters College? You're 37 years old.
Great question.
I'm
a millennial.
You're a millennial.
I am a millennial. So that's a great question. I think that for me, I'm highly active in social media. So I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, and I engage with students in a very, very deliberate way. And in some ways, it's very different than what you might see the traditional president engage with students. And so, you know, I invite my students, hey, tweet me if you're having an issue with a class or you're having an issue relative to a residence hall or whatever it is. I want you to have that kind of access to me as president such that I can make sure that I'm supporting your overall experience. Because we find that a lot of students, particularly students that we serve, they don't necessarily stop out because of an academic impediment or an academic shortfall. They may be stopping out for something as simple as, well, you know, I need $25 to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And because so many of them are first generation college students, mm-hmm. they don't realize the importance of being able to communicate. And many times we can step in. If we've built that rapport and that relationship, I or someone on my staff can step in and we can make the difference between that student going home or that student remaining and persisting and earning that degree. So
that's great. And Stephanie emails the show. I'm an active bedside nurse and a nursing professor. I've seen how careers in healthcare can open doors for people of all backgrounds. Will you consider strengthening and expanding your medical programs? They are the jobs of the future.
Certainly. One of the things that we have charged our faculty to do over the course of this year is a real holistic look, a comprehensive look at our curriculum. We want to make sure that we're providing a curriculum that's marketplace relevant. We want to make sure that we're providing a curriculum that also, in a very competitive global and expanding society, that students can get gainful employment once they graduate. We know that the cost of higher education is increasing, and so the value proposition is one that is really, for many folks, something that they're really having to assess. And so certainly we are going to be looking at, you know, of course, the health field is an expanding industry. And so we're going to be looking at a number of different potential degree programs and offerings as we go forward.
Let me ask you as well about the continued vibrancy and relevance of HBCUs in today's academic world, when kids can pick from so many different types of higher education. Tell me a little bit about the emotion, the psychology, the tradition, the history of young high school seniors as they make the decision of where they want to go to college, and their parents weigh into why they choose an HBCU.
Well, you know, I could spend, you know, a whole day talking right. about the historicity of HBCUs, but I'll tell you what I'm more interested in talking about is our contemporaneous relevance.
Right.
And when you talk about the contemporaneous relevance of HBCUs, you're talking about the institutions that produce almost 30-some-odd% of all the bachelor's degrees given to African Americans. You're talking about the majority of African American doctors, lawyers, and engineers all come from historically Black colleges or universities. So when you talk, you know, when I'm talking to a prospective parent or a student about an HBCU, I ask that parent, I said, well, what is it that you want for your child? Of course, they want them to be successful. And I say, well, you're looking at Institution A and Institution B. I want you to ask them, what's the experience of that student at that institution? Can they demonstrate to you with some empirical data that says that if you come to my institution, here's what it is that we produce? And when you stack up historically Black colleges and universities, particularly for students of color, and the success that they have in graduating students, sending them on to graduate or professional schools, and or preparing them for the world of work, the history and the data says that HBCUs do it better than anyone else.
Now, with all of that said, let's mention quickly before we let you go that you're kicking off your Distinguished Speaker Series at Edward Waters College on October 18th with Nikki Giovanni. Tell us about that.
Yes, yes. We're very excited about that. We just recently established a Distinguished Speaker Series at the institution. And so, as you mentioned, on October 18th, the iconic Nikki Giovanni will be opening up the first iteration of our Distinguished Speaker Series. And so it's going to be from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock in our Milne Auditorium. And we are just delighted. As you know, Nikki Giovanni is indeed an icon, a poet, author, activist, winner of 7 NAACP Image Awards, been Grammy nominated. And so it really will be a great opportunity for our entire college community to be able to come out and really have some expanded discourse and some experiential engagement with such an iconic figure as a Nikki Giovanni.
Yeah, sure to be a great night. And so kudos to you and welcome to Jacksonville. Come visit us again soon. Thanks for stopping by.
Certainly. Thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
He's Dr. A. Zachary Faison Jr., the new president and CEO of Edward Waters College. And much more still ahead later. The Jaguars are off to the best start of their season in a decade as they beat the Jets at home Sunday. Cole Pepper has a look back at that. But up next, honoring Gullah Geechee culture in Florida along the East Coast Greenway. We'll be right back.
WJCT readers are here for you. With the Florida Times Union complete with news, op-eds, and obits, our readers will bring the paper to life to serve those with blindness and other physical challenges. Need our service? Go online to wjct.org/radio reading. Listen there and register as a listener, or we'll send you a special radio free. Call us at 904-358-6308, because at Radio Reading, we give voice to the printed word.
Hey, Robert, you know what I love about your show, Planet Money?
What?
Planet Money, on the surface, is a show about economics, but really it's a show about how the world works.
And Guy Raz, what I love about How I Built This is that it's about entrepreneurs, but it's really about people who have dreams, who face crisis and loss and success.
Well, now you can hear
Planet Money
and How I Built This together in 1 hour, and I'm pretty sure this is going to blow your mind.
Or crack it open a bit.
Sunday at 2 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world. Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The Best in Classic and Modern Blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, this month, October, is Gullah Geechee Awareness Month in the state of Florida. The governor made that proclamation just the other day. It's a time to honor the contributions of the Gullah Geechee people. A new film is examining this incredible culture, along with something else that runs up the Gullah Geechee Corridor on our eastern seaboard, the East Coast Greenway. Take a listen.
Describe the East Coast Greenway as an organization that was founded 22 years ago, 1991, in New York City, by a group of people who thought it would be a wonderful idea to have a trail, an off-road paved trail. It would be safe and comfortable to ride between Key West, Florida, and Calais, Maine, the top of Maine.
It's an amazing thing, the East Coast Greenway, and so is the Gullah Geechee Corridor, primarily along the barrier islands of the Southeast, like, Cumberland Island and the Golden Isles and islands that go up into the Carolinas. Well, a new film explores all of this. It's called The Gullah Geechee Corridor and the East Coast Greenways. Derek Hankerson is the producer and director of this new documentary, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And so, you know, it's great to talk about this because October, here we are, the first day of October.
Yes.
Just declared by the governor,
yes.
Gullah Geechee Awareness Month.
Yes.
So we need to make people more aware of
yes.
this fascinating history.
We do. And we try and do that in our film, Gullah Geechee Corridor and the East Coast Greenways. We did produce or co-produce a film in 2012 where we talked more about the culture. We combined a production with the Florida Channel, and that production was called the Florida Channel Underground Railroad South because the Underground Railroad originally came south to Spanish Florida before going north. What I like to tell people or what I like to share with people, there's 268 years of missing Florida history from our history textbooks because we start promoting or talking about the United States of America in 1776, but Florida was founded and settled in 1513, and my family's hometown was settled in 1565, which is 450 years ago and 500 years ago, respectively.
St. Augustine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the Gullah Geechee people are really, I like to say, the immigrants to the New World who settled some of the first forts, formed some of the first militias, brought wheat to the New World, brought a lot of vegetables to the New World, and they were the slaves in their day because of the fact that they were experts in agriculture and growing rice, growing cotton, growing soybeans. They were experts. So these stories have not really been told, and as you know, because we've been working on this for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
This film really highlights the cycling trails or three cycling trails, Rails to Trails, East Coast Greenways, and the Sea Island Loop, with the most prominent being the East Coast Greenways.
Wow. So the Greenway and the Gullah Geechee Corridor are really, they track along the same exact place. And if you go to the website gullahgeecheecorridor.org, you can learn more about this. We're talking about the coast and the sea islands of the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida.
Yeah.
And the Greenway cuts right through that.
Exactly. It's pretty much what we were able to do after working with the National Park Service and Department of Interior and having the National Park Service recognize and give us credence that the Underground Railroad did come south, we wound up partnering with the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor to overlay the Park Service. And now we put another overlay on top of that, and that is the East Coast Greenways. The East Coast Greenways extends from Key West, Florida, all the way up to Bangor, Maine, and the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor extends from Pender County, North Carolina, all the way down to St. Johns County, Florida. And if you think of the storm that just devastated that whole area from North Carolina to Georgia, the storm Florence, what better time to roll out a film on the Gullah Geechee Corridor and the East Coast Greenways than today, October 1st, as you said, the governor had issued Day Ya Proclamation, as he's done every 6 years, naming October's Gullah Geechee Month.
Wow. And the Greenway, by the way, it's the country's longest biking and walking route. It does go almost unbroken, I think, from Maine to Florida, Key West. So when people watch this film, what will they learn?
Oh, great question. They will learn about Florida's natural ecotourism. They will learn about the cycling trails. They will learn a little bit more about Armstrong. Armstrong was settled by these newly freed slaves known as Gullah Geechee in 1886. The Armstrong community was named a town, and in 1910, my great-great-grandfather was appointed by President William Howard Taft as the first Negro or Black postmaster for that area.
Where is that?
Armstrong? Yeah. It's right off of 207 in St. Johns County, Florida.
Okay.
And my grandmother was West African, so I am a direct descendant. So the story and what we've done over the course of the last 20 years is personal, it's business, and it deals with tourism. So the film talks about tourism. It talks about St. Johns County being the most prosperous state in the state of Florida. And it really highlights the National Park Service, as well as highlighting the State Park Service, because we have former State Parks Director Don Fergione as one of our interviewees. I honestly believe that everyone will love the film because it's cross-cultural, it's environmentally sound, it deals with health and wellness, deals with cycling, deals with culture and history. It has a little bit for everyone, and I'd love to forward the film to you so you can take a look at it before it hits the networks.
Right. And you're currently shopping it to festivals and hopefully to PBS.
We have already shopped it to PBS nationally, and also shipped it to, of course, Andrew here in Jacksonville, and the president of PBS here in Northeast Florida, sent it to Central Florida PBS, we sent it to North Florida PBS. It's going to run on a number of county stations to include St. Johns County, St. Lucie County. In addition, we are purchasing some paid programming so that the film can get out, and it is going to get out, and we are also looking at film festivals. Yes.
Right. Well, it's just out. So keep your eye on this as we learn about the Gullah Geechee Corridor and the East Coast Greenway, which run on parallel tracks from St. Johns County all the way up through the Carolinas. And if you've never biked on the East Coast Greenway, by the way, or walked, you should. Get out and do that too. Filmmaker Derek Hankerson, always good to see you.
Thanks
so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Still to come, Cole Pepper, but up next, a live in studio performance from the Big Orange Chorus. Keep listening.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. It's hurricane season. Prepare now by learning your evacuation zone, updating your disaster kit to include water, non-perishable food items, a flashlight with extra batteries, a radio, and other important items. Pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide at your public library and visit jacksready.com for more information. Tune your radio to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
WJCT's Jaguars Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space and indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, when it comes to traditional barbershop quartet style singing, few in Jacksonville are as well known around town as the Big Orange Chorus. Now the men's a cappella group has a bigger stage than usual. They'll be singing the national anthem at the Jack's Iceman season opener coming up on October 13th. They join us now in studio with a preview. Hey, guys.
Hi, Melissa.
Hey.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so they're all four here, and Jason Deering, you're a spokesman for the Big Orange Chorus. By the way, you aren't the only four members of the Big Orange Chorus, right?
That's right. We've got about 30 guys singing actively now. We have three different quartets that are all going to be competing in our fall contests and singing in our Christmas show coming up on December 8th. And we'll all be there at the Iceman game as well.
Okay. Now, that's coming up October 13th. You guys are singing the national anthem, but you also are, I guess, their nonprofit partner for the night. Is that right?
That's right. They're going to... We're going to have a participation in the 50-50 raffle. We'll get some of that back. We'll get some money from the actual ticket sales, and we'll have a feature promotion during the game.
And you need to meet a goal, though. That's why you're on today.
We've got about 25 more tickets to sell to meet our goal for being the nonprofit, as well as the getting the other support and the promotions. So we'd really love to sell those 25 tickets.
Yeah. So go to their website now, bigorangechorus.com, and just click on the ticket link to buy a ticket to the Iceman season opener, which will be a lot of fun as they kick off their fall season. Now, you guys are much nicer than the Troublemakers in Pitch Perfect, I just have to say. You're very gentlemanly, and you really love this style of singing. Why do you think this is such an enduring kind of form of music for all over the world?
Well, this is one of the few original American music styles. It originated in America, in Oklahoma, and it's one of the simplest ways to sing. You don't need any instruments. You only need four guys who know how to sing, who know the same song, and can get together and enjoy it and perfect it as often as they like.
Four-part harmony is so, it's just so glorious to the ear.
It
really is. But it's harder than it looks, isn't it?
Well, it's easy to learn the songs, your part to a song, because you only have to learn one part to each song, but it's really hard to get every note just right.
How much practice goes into your performances?
My quartet practices once a week, and then we have a week of chorus rehearsals as well. So probably I spend 6 hours a week singing with these guys.
And why do you think you stuck with it? Because I've been talking to you now for a while when it comes to this.
I've been singing with the chorus for about four and a half years, and there's really no better way to use my voice than in church or singing with the chorus.
Yeah, and as you said, there are several dozen members of the Big Orange Chorus. This is all men's a cappella. If you're a woman that wants to do this, there's another group, the Sweet Adelines. They do this too. So it's really cool to have you guys on the show because, as we mentioned a minute ago, you come on all the time, but this time you're going to be doing the season opener at the Iceman game. How are they going to mic you up, and where are you going to be in the stadium?
We will be out on the ice on a carpet, I really
hope. You're going to be on the ice?
We're going to be, and mic'd as well as we can be for a group our size. They have lots of nonprofit groups come out and sing, and hopefully they're going to get the mics just right.
Yeah. Are you wearing boots? How are you going to get out there?
I don't know yet.
You don't know yet?
Hopefully.
Do any of you play hockey or no?
We've got a few guys from the North that are season ticket holders and love going to the games.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So with all of that said, we're going to take a listen now to, and you can, and I know you said your song is really short, but we have extra time, so you can sing slow, okay? It's the Big Orange Chorus as they prepare for their big opener at the Iceman season kickoff on October 13th. What are you going to be singing?
This song is called Sweet and Lovely. It's one of the original 12 what we call polecat songs, barber polecat songs that every barber shopper should know.
Here they are, the Big Orange Chorus.
Last night alone on our way home, you turned and said to me, I love you so. I want to know, what do you think about me? Sweet and lovely, that's what you are to me. Sugar and spice and everything nice, you're all a girl should be. Bride, I will smile all the while you're by my side. I will smile all the while you're
by. Interesting thing, Mark is engaged.
Oh,
to Molly, which is who's right over there. So, I mean, that's a great song for him to sing.
So you were singing that right to her, weren't you?
Of course you were. We were all singing it to her.
That is so great. You guys sound amazing. I was getting chills over here.
Thank you.
Okay, so if you go out to the Iceman season opener in the arena on October 13th, the Big Orange Chorus will be singing the national anthem to kick off the game right from the ice. But in order to get a portion of ticket sales from the hockey game that night, they've got to sell 25 more tickets. So go to BigOrangeChorus.com, buy some tickets now. And how will you use the money, guys?
We use it for helping to buy new music, helping to pay for our coaches, which come in and help us out, as well as getting ready to go to contests and competitions.
That's right. You got to travel to compete.
We do.
Yes, you do. Okay. So again, it's BigOrangeChorus.com. Have a great time. Don't slip and fall on the ice.
We'll do our best. Thank you.
Stay away from the Zamboni. The Big Orange Chorus. How about another round of applause? Good job, you guys. And in a moment, Cole Pepper, as the Jaguars are in the sports complex themselves Sunday with a win over the Jets. Cole's up after this. Can you sing a little more as we go to break?
Yeah.
Did you prepare anything else?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Heart of my heart, I love you. Life would be not without you. Light of my life, my darling, I love you. I love you. I can forget you never.
Compassionate Alternative Care is a physician group that certifies patients for their Florida Amendment 2 cards. Do you have pain, anxiety, fibromyalgia, or dependence on opioids? Learn more at compaltcare.com or at 265-0344.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and of Arlington reminds you water damage has ServPro of Jacksonville South and of Arlington reminds you water damage has ServPro of Jacksonville South and of Arlington reminds you water damage has ServPro of Jacksonville South and of Arlington reminds you water damage has ServPro of Jacksonville South and of Arlington reminds you water damage happens fast. The Weather Center predicts an active storm season. Be prepared with emergency service numbers 721-2230. ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington. Like it never even happened.
A lifetime lost and no experience gained.
In my mind, I'm 33 years old, but on paper, I'm 77. You went in jail at a certain age, you come out, you the same age, but a different number.
Life after prison with a look at seniors entering society decades after leaving it. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
From the work of C.B. Moore in the late 1800s to the discovery of the Miami Circle, the work of C.B. Moore in the late 1800s, 20 years ago, Florida archaeology has had some controversy. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on...
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it wasn't very pretty, but the Jaguars did get a fairly easy win at home Sunday over the New York Jets.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now, and Cole, the Jaguars off to their best start in over a decade this year.
Yeah, first time they've been 3-1 since 2007. By the way, that was a playoff season, you may recall. Easy win over the Jets by and large, 31-12. This was not the most satisfying 31-12 victory you've ever seen for a number of reasons. Now, there were some very good things for sure yesterday. Blake Bortles set a career high with 388 passing yards. He was razor sharp, especially early, completed his first 11 passes. And then on his 12th, that was an incomplete pass, made a great decision. He was under pressure, threw the ball away, and instead of losing 12 or 14 yards on a sack, they went back to 2nd and 10. They wind up converting a first down and go on to score a touchdown on that drive. So very good play there and a very good day for Blake Bortles. Two receivers had 100 yards receiving. D.D. Westbrook, 9 catches for 130 yards. And Dante Moncrief, 5 catches for 109, including a 67-yard touchdown. Both career days with the Jaguars for those two players. And the defense held the Jets to just 178 yards. So all around, you start talking about it. You say, well, that's pretty dominant. You like to see that. On the other side, there were some things that were really sticking in Doug Marrone's craw after the game. Three turnovers, 9 penalties for 89 yards, injuries as well. Leonard Fournette and Brandon Linder both left the game with injuries. Fournette returning for the first time since injuring his hamstring in the opener. Now looks like he's going to probably be, again, on the Fournette watch, the injury watch here for the next several weeks. And as I mentioned, Marrone after the game, not particularly impressed with what was a fairly dominant win.
Obviously, it's a win, you know, which enables us to finish the quarter, which was our goal of 3-1. So we're able to do that. Obviously, we had penalties, we had turnovers. Those are the things I told the team that if we keep continuing to play like that, man, it's going to get us in trouble, or we weren't able to come back and win a game.
I think what this tells us is that the expectations, not only externally but internally, are very, very high for the Jaguars. When you win a game by, you know, by 19 points and are never really threatened. And you're unhappy about it, right? This is not a few years ago, a 19 point win. We would have had a parade down Bay Street.
Right.
Now, hey, it's not just about the points. It's about how the team played. And he's right. When they start playing better competition better than the Jets, things like being -3 in the turnover margin and committing almost 100 yards with the penalties can cost you a game. And that could happen this week because they have a very tough test against right now undefeated Kansas City. The Chiefs play tonight against the Broncos on Monday Night Football, but they have to go to Kansas City, Arrowhead Stadium, which is one of the most difficult places to play traditionally in the National Football
League. Why is that?
Such a, just a loud crowd, the sea of red, and by the way, the Chiefs are really good. Their offense is fantastic. This is going to be a classic offense against defense kind of matchup. This will be a real measuring stick game for the Jaguars.
Now, that's your neck of the woods. You grew up out there. Are you going to this game?
I am indeed.
Must be exciting for you.
I'm excited. It's the first time I will have gone to a game at Arrowhead Stadium since 1995, probably January 96 in the postseason. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
and there may be some pregame barbecue had.
And there
on
could
the way.
Be some Culpepper Q. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's talk college football. All local teams, they all won over the last weekend.
Gators, Seminoles, and Bulldogs all having good Saturdays. Florida won its second straight on the road at Mississippi State. They're now 4-1 on the season, and I think we're seeing Dan Mullen make a real difference in the Gators program. Is it too early to start proclaiming good hire, bad hire with these new coaches? Probably so, but we'll do it anyway. I think Dan Mullen has been a terrific hire for the Gators, and as he continues to build that program and be able to recruit players who suit the kind of game he wants to play, I think Florida is going to be right back in the national picture before too long. This year, I don't think they're ready to compete on the national stage, but I do think they can compete to be, you know, second in the SEC East. Georgia, just too good. I think they're going to win the East going away. If there's such a thing as an unimpressive 26-point win, that's what the Bulldogs turned in, beating Tennessee. Georgia rolled up 215 yards rushing and were never truly threatened, but it wasn't the runaway that many expected. The Dogs entered the game as a 32-point favorite. And still ranked number 2 in the nation behind only Alabama. Florida State earning an ACC win on the road at Louisville. The Noles came from behind to win. Biggest win of the season for Florida State. Finally, a little bit of energy, and it looks like Willie Taggart and that coaching staff starting to figure out how to best use their players. Always a big challenge for a first-year coach is really understanding how a player responds under pressure in a game situation. They're starting to figure that out. We'll see, though. Again, talk about measuring stick games. They have one on Saturday. Down in South Florida against Miami, the FSU-Miami game, always a classic rivalry.
Yeah, sure. And in the meantime, have a good trip to the Heartland.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing you next Monday.
Thanks, Melissa.
And follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A is up next, and if you missed anything this morning, make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Melissa Ross. This is 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.